I'm Mike Breen, Public Awareness Officer for the American Mathematical Society, and I'm talking with Peter J. Denning, who is at the Naval Postgraduate School. He's a chair of the Computer Science Department and director of the Sobrowski Institute. And we're talking about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, and blockchains. Can you give us an overview of Bitcoin?
Well, Bitcoin is a name that was created in 2009 by some anonymous guy named Satoshi Nakamoto, or at least that was his pseudonym, for a cryptocurrency system. And by a cryptocurrency, he meant a system in which all transactions were cryptographically signed and could be anonymous. In his system, even though the title of the system is called Bitcoin, there aren't any actual coins. There's only, a coin is like a unit of value, like a dollar bill is the unit of value in the United States. But in his system, a Bitcoin is simply a unit of value, and the amount of value that you have is determined by, like in a bank account, by all the transactions you've exercised in the past. So every time you've written a check for somebody or received a check from somebody, that goes into your transaction record, and whatever my net value in that record is determines whether or not I can make the next payment. If I try and write a check that exceeds the amount of my account, I'm not allowed to do it. And today, the banks affect this, but in a cryptocurrency system, Nakamoto wanted a system in which we could still do the transactions, but they would be anonymous, and we could still disallow a transaction that would try and spend money I don't have. So that all of this got called Bitcoin. In many ways, it's like a checking system that you're familiar with the bank. You have an account. You have money in your account. Somebody sends you a check, the money goes into your account. You write a check, money goes out of your account. And the net value of your account is the sum of all the ins minus the sum of all the outs. And your ability to write the next check depends on whether you have a positive amount in your account. So that's what the bank does for you. And Nakamoto, the designer of Bitcoin, wanted to have a transaction record that was like that, but was not controlled by any bank. And he also wanted the names of the account owner to be hidden and anonymous so that nobody could tell who was actually initiating transactions. So that was his starting point. Bitcoin, as I say, is the name of a currency system in which transactions are cryptographically represented.
So you're making the parallel with a checking account, like the bank knows who I am and they're in control. And so this system wants to have the in and out, like you were talking about, but without those features, you know, so that someone can be anonymous or that the bank isn't in control.
In the Nakamoto's Bitcoin, there's no central banking control anymore. So this means he wants to have many copies of that, what the bank would call its database. He would call it a transaction record or ledger, transaction ledger. So he said he's going to have many copies of the transaction ledger distributed all through the network. There's not going to be any central place in the network that owns that ledger. Everybody is sort of like public property. Everybody owns it. And in order to make a change in the ledger, you have to, number one, have some kind of method of agreement so that all the parties who have copies agree that adding a transaction to the ledger is okay. And then once you have they've reached that agreement, you have to have protocols for them to install that on all their copies and verify to everybody else they've completed their installation. So this gets to be very complicated, as you can see, if you have many copies. Bitcoin currently has something like 5,000 or more nodes who actually have copies. There's quite a few out there who have the copies of this database. And just trying to manage that, keep all the copies consistent with each other, is a very big problem.
It is complicated, and it's a pretty clever construction, too. What would you say are the interesting mathematical aspects of it?
Well, one of the interesting things is the term blockchain itself means that there's a series of blocks chained together, obviously. Each block is simply a group of transactions. The amount of the transactions is a detail, but let's, the purpose of this talk, say it's about 100 transactions. So as people in the network are spending money, they broadcast their transactions to the network. All the nodes who have copies of database pick up those broadcasts, and then they try and update their database. And when each one of them accumulates another 100 transactions, they say, I've now got a block ready to go and link to the chain. And then they have to go through a protocol to link that new block to the chain. And the way it's been set up is that's like a race. So lots of nodes can say, oh, I'm going to try and attach this block to the chain. I need to validate all the transactions in the block first by verifying their hashes. And then once I've done that verification, I can add the block to my copy and then broadcast to everybody else that my copy has now been updated. And the rule is that whoever does that first wins and all the other people stop. So there's a lot of messages getting communicated around the network here, just trying to help this protocol work itself out. So that's a very complicated process right there. Now, another aspect of this protocol is that it's been set up purposely so the time to validate a block and add it to the chain is about 10 minutes. So that once, let's say I'm a node and I now have 100 transactions, I want to group together, put them in a block, add it to the chain. I have to validate each of those transactions by checking that their hashes are correct. Then I have to compute the hash of the entire block by combining together all the hashes of the transactions. Then once I've got that, I can now broadcast that to the whole network. I could say, everybody, here's the newly added block, here's its hash, and you all go add it to your copy of the blockchain. Now, that requirement that a new block takes 10 minutes to add is on purpose, so that if I want to add a fraudulent block, I still have to win the race in order to get everybody else to agree to put the fraudulent block onto their chain. In order for that to happen, I have to have a lot of computing power so I can compute the new block faster than anybody else can. So there is actually a so-called 51% attack that the designer Nakamoto of Bitcoin blockchain said he wanted to avoid, which is that if any node has at its command 51% or more of the computing power of the network, it can compute the block that it wants to add faster than anybody else, even if they all cooperate with each other. And then the guy with the fraudulent block gets to insert it, and nobody else knows the difference. So the idea here of having this long thing is to make sure that nobody has 51% of the power. And if somebody did, they could be the fraudulent one adding blocks. But if nobody has 51% of the computing power, then whoever happens to get the new block within 10 minutes is going to be the winner. So that's a very important constraint there to make sure that those who wish to add a fraudulent block have very small likelihood of actually succeeding in doing so.
And you mentioned hash, which maybe not everyone knows, but that's a number associated with either a transaction or a block?
Yeah, what a hash is, it's a mathematical function. Basically, it takes a file, scrambles all the bits together, and outputs a 256-bit pattern that summarizes the whole file. And it's called a hash because the computation to do it is just sort of scrambling and mixing up bits, combining them in various different ways until you get all the 256 of the output computed. There's a couple of requirements on the hash function. One is that it be one way, and one way means if I tell you the 256 output, you cannot figure out what input it had to produce that because it got so badly scrambled up you can't go backwards. That's one of the requirements. Cryptographers use hashes all the time because they want to, for example, if they have a document, let's say I have a 100 megabyte document that I've created, a Word document, and I want to verify that it's been properly signed and authorized. What I do on the public key crypto system, I could sign the whole document by encrypting it with my secret key. But that could take a very long time because that's a 100, that's my example, 100 megabyte file. With these hash functions, I can do the whole job. What I would do is I take the file and hash it, which goes very fast, and then I would cryptographically sign the hash, which goes very fast because it's short, it's 256 bits. So this is a very great advantage to the cryptographer to be able to hash large things down into these standard chunks and not be able to go back to the large thing because the hash function is irreversible. So there's a lot of math been involved in figuring out what's the right hash function. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, has produced a standard called SHA-256, which means a secure hashing algorithm with 256-bit output. This is what's used in the blockchain. So this is a very important thing, being able to hash a block so that you can verify quickly that it is the same block that was put there originally. It hasn't been tampered with, but it can't be reversed, so you can't easily go back and say, well, I'm going to modify the original block to be what I want it to be and retain the hash. You can't do that. If you make any modification in the original block, the hash will change, and you've got to recompute it.
So you've talked about the blockchain a few times.
Yeah.
There are firms and people thinking about using that for things besides cryptocurrency. Do you think it will, you might say, catch on?
Well, this remains to be seen. There's a lot of interest in these blockchains because of the ability to distribute them, which means that you can put copies of the database, the ledger. If you can represent your database as a ledger, you can call that your blockchain. And then you could put copies of that on multiple nodes in the network. So there's no single point of failure anymore. So some database gets attacked or loses power or something happens. There's lots of copies left elsewhere in the network, and you can reconstruct the data from those. So the idea of a distributed database is very attractive for resiliency and reliability. And also the difficulty that an attacker would have to fraudulently modify the database, which would seem to be a temptation if you have multiple copies all over the network. I just find a copy and fraudulently modify it and then see if I can trick everybody else to believing that's the correct copy. This becomes quite difficult with some of the protocols in these blockchains. The attraction is that we get to distribute the data over many nodes, making it more reliable and resilient. At the same time, we still make it very difficult to hack, which allows us to distribute with confidence that it's not going to be hacked. So those are the attractions. And a lot of companies are interested in looking at whether they could do their some critical databases in the form of blockchain, which would get them this distributivity without fear of getting hacked. The difficulty with all of that is that the protocols are expensive to maintain. There's a lot of messages have to be sent around in the network. And the computational work to add blocks to the blockchain depends on how much computing power you have at hand. And there's cabals of, we don't want to call them criminals, but there's cabals of, they call themselves miners, who, M-I-N-E-R, who compute hashes for blockchains. And they try and control more than 51% of the computing power. So they're the ones who are to be in the position of being able to add new blocks to a chain. So this is one of the difficulties, and so obviously the designers of these things do not want to have cabals form of people trying to defeat the chain. And there's a big search on to find blockchain architectures that would satisfy the distributivity and hack-proof requirement and still not be subject to being taken over by a cabal.
So I know.
So I don't know when that, you know, it's going to take a while to sort all that out, but there's a strong attraction to the technology. But there's also a lot of people want to be careful and be skeptical until it's been proven.
Peter, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, that's much it.
I know.
You know, I guess I would add that if you're a newbie to the whole situation and you get interested in blockchains and want to study up about it, there are good books about it. There's a few good papers about it, but it is a complicated subject, and there's a lot of cryptography involved in there and trying to understand it. You can't completely understand it unless you also have a basic understanding of how transactions are represented in databases and how banks operate and try and prevent fraudulent transactions. So you got to put all that together, you know, the architecture of a distributed system being put together with some knowledge of how banks manage transactions, being put together with all the cryptography, which allows us to do all the hashing and the signing of with public and private keys. This turns out to make a very complex mixture, and the newcomer often says, this is difficult to understand, and they're right. It is difficult to understand, but it's worth trying to understand because your assets are going to be protected or not by this technology in the future. Probably a year or two from now, some of what we said will be obsolete. Because, you know, some of the questions that the technology has raised will have better answers
resolved.
than they have today.
And I noticed you spelled out miner. That was good of you because it's something I saw on the web says that you like puns. So
right, we don't want to
You don't want to get
No,
into
turn
that?
it into a minor disaster,
Exactly. There you go. So it's good. It is good to spell it out. Peter, thanks very much for taking all that time to talk with us about that and
Okay.
explain bitcoins and blockchains and cryptocurrency to us. That's Peter J. Denning, who is chair of the computer science department at the Naval Postgraduate School and director of the Sobrowski Institute. Peter, thank you.
You're welcome.